Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to take a bite out of the competition? Are you looking for ideas to make your business better? Welcome to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.
Sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
At the core of every successful business, you'll find people making a difference. And with each episode of the Core Business Show, we talk with those people, examine those ideas, and explore the strategies that make them special. Now, the host of the Core Business Show, Tim Jacquet.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Core Business Show. I'm Tim Jacquet, your host. Today, I have the pleasure of having guest Patrick Thibault. He is the writer of My Journey as a Comeback Medic from Desert Storm to Operation Enduring Freedom. If you have any questions, we open the chat room now. You can post your questions in the chat room, or you can go and Twitter us at hashtag Apple Capital or email at info at Apple Capital Group. Good morning, Patrick. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. How are you all doing today?
Great. It's Happy Friday. I guess to begin with, tell us about yourself. Listeners like to hear personal stories about the person versus reading the bio. So just take the time, just tell us about yourself.
Well, I was born up in Kittery, Maine, on that Navy base that recently had one of their subs catch on fire. My dad was stationed up in Maine to do recruiting for the Army. Mm-hmm. And I grew up as a military brat, having traveled over in Europe and lived here in the United States. And I ended up graduating from high school in Korea in Seoul. And I got to go to the Olympics there, which was quite a lot of fun. And I have two sisters, I'm married, a dog and two cats. And I work as a nurse practitioner, which is similar to a physician's assistant. We do what a physician does to a degree. And I work in an urgent clinic and a doctor's office, basically seeing my own patients.
Wow. Tell us your journey, becoming an Army brat. I guess that's kind of influenced you and serving the country. Bring us, since you're going to, I think, basic training, and how basic training and that training kind of prepare you to actually go to the first war that you was listed in, from Desert Storm.
The truth be known, that the basic training that I went through didn't prepare us for war. It was
the
Cold War was going on. We spent more time in garrison learning how to make our beds and tuck it really tight so they could dump the quarter on it than we did to learn how to fight in the desert. And oddly enough, I went to basic training in El Paso, Texas, in the middle of the desert. We spent basically 6 weeks in garrison, you know, on the base, learning how to do soldier stuff, and about 2 weeks out in the desert, learning how to do more combat stuff. But you know, you learn as you go along, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the basic training has evolved since then, and it's definitely more field or desert orientated, and less a garrison or base orientated training as far as learning how to become a soldier. The initial training, it was paramount. I mean, I learned some of the basic skills that a soldier needs to learn, but those special skills that you just learn in the desert, we didn't pick up until I actually went over to the first Gulf War.
Wow. So basically, is it a matter of discipline for the basic training? And during that time, since we were still going through the Cold War, we really didn't have anything to, I think with the war before then was Vietnam, we really haven't had anything for almost, 20-some-odd years or even longer before that Desert Storm operation started. So you think during that time that they really – I know there's a – when you enlist, there's a possibility you go to war, but do you think during that time they really wasn't expecting going to a war anytime soon? That's why they didn't put those type of skills in place?
I didn't think it. I mean, I joined the Army. I wanted to jump out of airplanes and become a medic.
Mm-hmm.
And the thought of war never really, honestly, never crossed my mind. I knew, I thought there'd be more of a war in Korea between us, South Korea, fighting the North Koreans than what's been going on in the Middle East. But then again, I wasn't definitely not an international affairs or political specialist. That arena. I mean, I've learned a lot more since, but it's people interact with each other.
Taking us from that journey, what is it like to actually, when they actually gave you notice and you're now in transit to go to Desert Storm, what is it like when you actually land on the ground, now you're in this different environment, now you're really going to combat. Kind of tell us what that experience is like.
Well, I was lucky. I got to train up as a medic with the 75th Ranger Regiment at Georgia, at Hunter Army Airfield, mm-hmm. to earn my expert field medical badge. And I really needed that training as a new medic. I was eager at that point to go over to the Middle East, to Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. I got there in the winter time, actually, around January or December of 1990, before Desert Storm kicked off. Actualization that, you might die sort of hits you. You see all this military infrastructure that has been built up over the past few months. Everybody's walking around with different weapon systems. The fact that you have to go and walk around with a gun, a rifle, or a pistol, it's for a 19-year-old kid that's lived in relative peace, it's a little startling, but sort of exciting at the same time. I was excited.
When did reality really set in and say, well, this is for keeps? You might not come back, or are you going to be seriously injured as a casualty of war? Did that ever aha moment ever click in and say, "Hey, from this particular moment, yeah, see this. This is new." However, then it becomes totally different. Reality really hits you, and things could go really bad.
That's like the aha moment that people get. And that
mm-hmm.
happened to me when we had our first Scud missile attack. And these Scud missiles that the Iraqi Army would launch, and our Patriot missiles either would hit them or miss them, and they would explode. Of course, the aiming mechanisms on them were real bad. That was my aha moment that, this is some pretty serious situations that we have to, we could all die, or some of us could die. I was a medic in our medical section supporting our unit, and, medics go out where the soldiers go out, and we don't go out there to play around. We went out to fight. So, we realized early on that, this is pretty serious business, and people die, unfortunately.
Wow. Now, since you were a medic, tell us what type of conditions, kind of a mental picture for us, that you had to walk into to save another soldier's life or keep them maintained in order to bring them back so they can get serious medical attention.
My mental condition at the time? Is that what you're asking?
Well, the experience, kind of give us a picture on the life of a medic. Now you're serving as a medic in the field. What is that journey like? And kind of paint a picture for us of that particular experience.
Early on.
And what? Early on.
Early on, I was scared, and I never did this for real before. And I was just going through what I remembered in my training and, you know, practicing these skills time after time. But I didn't know the outcome of what I was doing to the guys that got hurt and shot up, because I never really did it before. So in the book it said I have to do this. Okay, I put a tourniquet on, for example. Well, I put the tourniquet on, but I didn't make it tight enough. I never put a tourniquet on someone before. So, he's still bleeding. So that's why they say, you know, twist the tourniquet till the bright red bleeding stops. Ah, so I have to make it tighter. It's one thing to read it in the book and then to actually do it. So as a human being, I became more enlightened in the skill of, in the art and the task of saving lives. So as I went on in my, you know, career, you know, I learned from my mistakes and went forward. And by the time I was in the Operation Desert Storm, I was definitely a seasoned, I was like the old medic that knew everything that people would go to ask questions. But you know, initially, those first times I started an IV on somebody in combat, so sticking a needle while you're in somebody while you're being shot at was very scary. After I've done it, you know, both in combat and, you know, back in the States or on a training mission somewhere, so many times, it was second nature. So we learn, I'm a Star Trek fan, and something that Kirk told one of his cadets on one of the shows is we learn by doing, and I'm a firm believer in that too.
Wow. Can you describe one of the scenes that you had to run across someone by being shot at, and you trying to save this person's life, and you're actually in the heat of battle or something? What's that experience? What kind of describe what in that particular scene? I'm not sure you have it in the book, but an experience like this one, but regarding the tourniquet. Any other type of situations that you run into that you actually had to save someone's life? Anything that comes to mind?
Yes. I had three guys that were Syrian, actually, because we were part of the Special Forces Command. So we had to work with the international forces, the coalition forces, what they were called. And they had gotten shot up pretty bad. One guy's leg was blown off. Another guy's arm was blown off. And I was thrusted into being the medic to take care of them. So I go up to these guys, and I get that narrow vision initially. And in a way, that's not good, but in a way it is, because I learned to just focus on, you know, the big things, airway, breathing, bleeding, and shock. On the other hand, I was shaking so hard that I could only manage to get start an IV in one of the guys. And the other two guys, I put on some oxygen, gave them some morphine, and I just, you know, I did the best I could. There was shooting. But I remember the smells and the sights and the sounds. I talk about the smells, like, you know, burning fuel. It was in the early spring of 1991, or still winter of 1991, and you know, the greenery on the desert in that time, because it does rain in the winter, started to blossom. So I remember that smell of desert flowers, if you want to call it. And, of course, the smell of the ammunition, if you've ever been to a gun range, the carbon residue that smells. It has a very distinct smell to it. and the smell of the burning gasoline for the fuel from the helicopters. And then the sounds, of course, the guy screaming, speaking in Arabic. I didn't know what they were saying, but I sort of did know what they were saying. Anybody would be, you know, what would an American soldier be saying when they've been shot up and screaming? It didn't matter what they were saying. I was there to take care of them. And, of course, I still vividly remember the sights, seeing these three men, seeing some bad guys downrange, and doing what had to be done. Of course, my vision was so tunnelized that I just focused on the task. And then after the mission, I had that aha moment. And I looked at my uniform, and there was so much blood on it. You know, my boots were soaked. I wore gloves, but I had blood basically. Well, you know, there the wounded blood on my uniform, and you know that was a growing moment, and it was definitely a moment of change, and that was one of the times my self-actualization that, you know, if I've been thrown at this as a teenager and just out of high school, you know, I think I like working as a medic. That was my most that was my aha moment for me, really.
Okay.
We
just take a break for a moment. We'll be back in a moment with my journey as a combat medic with Patrick Thibault. We'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to the Core Business Show, sponsored by Apple Capital Group. Apple Capital Group in Jacksonville, Florida is a commercial lender that specializes in asset-based loans, equipment leasing and financing, invoice financing, commercial real estate loans, and asset-based financing in the U.S. and Canada. Apple Capital Group is a direct lender that lends on their private equity investment portfolio. 90% of most loans are decided within 2 hours, and vendor funding within 24 hours after documents are completed with a one-page application. No slow no's, just a quick decision and a fast yes. To get more information about lending from Apple Capital Group, call 866-611-7457. That's 866-611-7457 to speak with one of our loan specialists. Or visit us right now at applecapitalgroup.com. Welcome back to The Core. Once again, here's Tim Jacquet.
We'll be back with Patrick Thibault, and we are talking about his book. Patrick, when you decided to sit down and write a book, what inspired you to write this particular book and its title?
Closure. I wanted to have closure. And I wanted to share my fairly unique experiences with the rest of the world. I served with the 160th, which was Special Operations Aviation Regiment, as a medic when I was on active duty. It was the same unit that flew in the SEAL team to take out, you know, bin Laden. And they also did some other operations, some scud busting missions, and some stuff down in South America. I don't talk about a lot of the stuff that I don't talk about, but I had a, you know, sort of a Mary, a wonder, you know, Mary, and how do I put it? I had a wonderful experience during my active duty time. I mean, it was almost a dream. I jumped out of airplanes. I was on flight status as a medic. I mean, I was living the dream. Then I went to college, became a nurse. I missed playing. I say playing, you know, not just like playing, but I missed being a soldier. So I joined the National Guard and did my rest of my 20 years with the National Guard to serve the country and really just to get to what I call get my green out of my system and wearing the uniform and being a soldier, but on a part-time basis. So the number one reason was to share my story, enclosure for myself, to like a big circle of my experiences, and just to get it out there. I self-published the book initially last year, and I sent it. I knew that self-published authors rarely make it because you're self-published. You have the, you don't have the means to the venture and the capital to get your book out there. And you know, the reality is I work a full-time job and a part-time job. So I got my book out there, and I sent it to like 15 different publishing companies, and luckily one of them picked it up. And
wow.
So that was exciting. You know, my first book, I got picked up by a major player in the niche market that I wrote my book with. So I was happy mm-hmm. about that, of course.
Wow. Now, you mentioned in that, I think earlier, you was jumping out of airplanes. What is it like to really jump out of the airplane?
You know, people say that there's two things that fall out of the sky. One of them, bird, whatever. No, it was fun. It was because you face, I had actually, I'm scared of heights. The walking over a bridge just scares me. But it's great to just face your fear and just go with it and conquer that fear. It didn't change that I was scared of heights. I still get a little nauseous, you know, walking over a big bridge and looking down, I get a little dizzy. But it's the ultimate adrenaline rush. And I was an adrenaline junkie. I wanted to do the challenge, you know, what was the most challenging thing? Jumping out of airplanes. When my dad was stationed at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, that's where the 82nd Airborne and many Special Forces units are. They all parachute out of planes. I saw that. I said, you know, that's like the coolest carnival ride that you could get paid to do. Although, you know, we soldiers are paid just a little extra to jump out of planes or helicopters, or even some have jumped out of hot air balloons. I never jumped out of a hot air balloon. But it was because it was fun and it was there, and I wanted to do it. Back in the day, though, the paratroopers, we were different. I know this sounds cosmetic, considering everybody's fighting so hard today, but the paratroopers wore a different hat. We wore a maroon beret, and that signified the airborne paratrooper. I still have my beret. I'm looking at it right now, actually. And it distinguishes us from the other soldiers that, you know, were not airborne, that didn't jump out of airplanes. And I wanted to feel special.
Mm-hmm.
So, but mostly I wanted to jump out of airplanes. And so that's what I did. So, yeah, adrenaline rush, having fun, being afraid of something, but yet it was relatively safe. I mean, nothing is safe. There's people that get, you know, crash on carnival rides all the time, or walking down the street, or in a car wreck. So, but, yeah, it was a controlled environment. We would jump. There was someone who was called a jump master that would check our equipment, make sure everything was in, you know, standing order. And anything about the Army, if it's not a certain way, it's not acceptable. There are certain standards that have to be met. So our parachutes were packed, you know, according to standard. I knew the guys that would pack our parachutes, so we, you know, they would open up as we jumped out of the airplane or the helicopter. It was safe. My funnest jumps, we would actually parachute into the ocean, off of the ocean off Savannah, Georgia, during the summer months. And of course, to me, that was the funnest. So we would fly in our helicopters about 10 miles out to sea, and jump out the back of the helicopters, and our chutes would open, and we had the softest landing in the world because it's water, and you're only falling 20 miles an hour. So it's sort of like just jumping off a diving board, really, when you land, not the typical crash landing you get when you hit the, you know, hot ground.
So what it feels like when you actually hit water?
It was mesmerizing. Here I am describing it with it was mesmerizing. It was just, you anticipate. My first time I did it, I didn't know how hard, but I just, it's like you cutting a hot knife through butter, and it just mm-hmm. goes right through, and then there's no, you know, there's no strain on your back, there's no strain on your legs, your head doesn't hit the ground hard. Of course, you're in the water, and everything just, you just float back up, really. Of course, we had flotation stuff on, devices on to keep us afloat, but, and it was just,
okay.
Of course, the salt water went into my mouth and through my nose, even though I kept everything shut, but that just that force of the landing, I'm looking underground, you know, under the water for a minute, because we did go down several, probably 5 or 10 feet after we landed, just like you would do with a regular dive, and we came back up, and it was, you know, it was hypnotic. It was really beautiful.
Wow. So even when you actually jump and you hit the water, it's more of a soft landing. So, you know, you look at people who jump off of bridges, and they say sometimes when they hit the water, it's like hard. So it's not really the case. Actually, when you hit the water, it's more of a softer landing, but you have to, when the parachute, I guess you just break the momentum of the speed that
yeah.
then you really don't injure yourself, then versus going full force, you know, with the weight and the speed that actually can injure you. The last part of this, when you actually give us some last thoughts about the book, and if you have something you want to share out of the book, maybe reading a story to close the program with, then tell us also the course you mentioned earlier that is available on Amazon. Kind of share us with another story out of the book that our readers might get that you'd like to close with.
I talk about, because of my combat experiences, I developed, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. I had it pretty bad. In fact, this weekend's 4th of July, and I don't look forward to it. I talk about it in the book, how the fireworks just sort of, I'm going to say this, it sort of drives me crazy. So I have to put earplugs, and I just go under my bed and cover myself up with the pillows. You know, I go to sleep. But I write about post-traumatic stress disorder because we have so many other soldiers. And when I say soldiers, that's men and women who are in combat that have this and are trying to reintegrate, you know, into society. But we just can't turn off, you know, all that adrenaline and all that pain, blood, and deformity that we've seen in combat. It doesn't turn off. Some of those memories and experiences clicked and changed us a little bit. I talked about writing the book for closure, and that was one of the reasons why I wrote the book, to help me deal with my own PTSD. It's, you know, that was a tough write, but, you know, I also talk about a question that many people ask that I just want to let them know. Don't ever ask a soldier, how many people did you kill? Yeah, we're soldiers, and ultimately that's the worst question you can ask someone who just came back from the, you know, the Middle East. And this applies to any military, any country. You never ask someone, you know, how many soldiers did you kill? Or not soldiers, but how many people did you kill? Because one, that's
wow.
just, you know, just puts the conversation off, and two, that just triggers bad experiences from the men and women that, you know, did what they volunteered to do and were sent over to do, but it was still, that's still one question that is best avoided. PTSD is something very serious because of suicide. And many of our soldiers that have become veterans can't deal with reintegrating into society, and sadly, suicide's the option that they think, that they believe is the best thing for them. Of course, I would tell them no, suicide's not. Fight it, deal with it. It's not going to go away, but fight it. You're a fighter. So that's what I talk about in my chapter called PTSD. The book is available. Of course, I have my ebook that's actually coming out. It's on Amazon.com right now. It's on actually Barnes & Noble's. There's two books. There's one that looks green. That was my self-published book, which is still available on Amazon. And then there's a book that has a white cover on it. And the publishing company, Osprey Publishing, they changed it up a little bit because, you know, they're a publishing company. I designed that front cover on the green book myself. And they decided, you know, they wanted to go with something a little more simple. But it's on Amazon.com. It's My Journey as a Combat Medic. And it's on all the websites. And they're selling it initially as an ebook, which I'm excited for because, you know, it's out there. They're doing all the marketing. And, of course, I'm doing marketing for it too. But, you know, I have a big player out there doing a lot of the stuff that a self-published author would have to do for the book. So, I mean, I'm very tickled that, you know, I finally got my little piece of the pie, as George Jefferson would say from that old show from back in the 80s. I'm moving on up to the sky. I finally got my piece of the pie. You know, I'm excited about that.
Wow. I mean, congratulations on the book and getting picked up by a major publisher, and wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for coming on the program again. And any last words you'd like to leave us with?
Yeah. Live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Again, it's been another production of the Apple Capital Group's The Core Business Show. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.
Thank you for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. For a free quote on equipment leasing and financing, visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. And fill out the information to receive your free quote. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to The Core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. Thanks again for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.